I just started the recorder, but that doesn't mean at your leisure we can start or go any direction you like.
We could go ahead and start. Jimmy, get your you can join into it. Okay, it is 8:34. We'll call this meeting to order. And our roll call, please. It's like
Councilor Rungu is here. Sandra Serber, Nancy Steinberg, Ed Simon, Roger Holstein, Jim Pruti, the staff person, and Karen Smith.
Everybody have a chance to read the minutes? Any corrections or amendments? Moving second. Group. We do not have any citizens in the group tonight.
Well, thank you. I have just some updates and some things that kind of have been occurring, and so I just want to brief you on that and kind of not monopolize the whole discussion, but certainly can give some updates. For starters, we talked with the council about establishing some rules for parks. We talked about that last month. I went to council with that sort of thought process, and council was not opposed. They were just not in support of the length of the list, and so they asked staff to go back and retool the list, and citing things like, you know, if a park is closed from 10 at night to 5 in the morning, you probably don't need to have a rule that says no camping, because it would be covered under that rule. So the intention was it appeared to be less dictatorial and say you can't do this, you can't know this, know that, know that, know this. So so I have done that. I went back with Lieutenant Malloy, and we narrowed the list down, and then the chief didn't like the full narrowing, so he upped it. So so then we've had a discussion, and so we are in the process of putting together a new list of rules that is scheduled to go before the council on Monday at the work session just for further discussion, and we need to get them to sort of agree to or disagree or give further direction as to how we want to handle that. There is only one sticking point at this point, excuse me, and it's and the issue is around whether or not we can say no weapons in the parks. And obviously, my preference would be, sure, we don't want to have weapons of any kind in parks. We want parks to be, a place where people don't have to deal with that. But our Constitution provides specific rights to people, and the right to own and bear arms is very clear. And so that could be potentially very controversial. And to take that one step further, there's a process where someone could, in fact, possess a permit to have a concealed weapon. And that would only further complicate the ruling that says no weapons in parks, because then you wouldn't even be able to see it, and then would that mean that they couldn't even have their concealed weapon? It is something that is going to be the one rule that we're really struggling with, and you can see, hopefully you can see why. So I don't know where that's going to go. Chief Miranda. Their preference would be to disallow any weapons in parks. And that would be my preference, but I don't want to be the government entity that takes away someone's constitutional right. It's already defined in certain places like courts of law or it might even be council chambers and things of that nature. They have made some rules on that with good reason, perhaps. But the park is a little different, so I'm not sure how that was going to play out. Yeah.
I know that this is related to, and we don't, what Jim's saying is really true. I do have a theory on guns coming in and going in art and gallery. And gallery was freaked out by the Fourth Amendment right to their arms, who came and protested the gallery for showing their work without having ever returned. So this is the real work, and so that is the.
I think the real question is, do we even want to go there?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, the other play out is parks have picnickers. Some do.
Mm-hmm.
Picnickers sometimes have watermelons, and they carry nice big long knives. And I think like so many inches in
here. Right.
Right. So are you going to ban?
I fully agree.
And it is a visualized
discharge
of
weapons,
no matter what.
Within the city limits.
So therefore, you're kind of got your gun to cover.
Mm-hmm. I can see where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Children,
mm-hmm.
and then have a weapon, it falls down, a kid picks it up. I mean, there's all kinds of scary scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't solve all of them. Sometimes having common sense outweighs everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look around at the gangbangers and all that who do not care, and they're the ones with the weapons, I can see where the police say give us the advantage so that we can take them out of the park to make it safer. So it is going to be something that probably that part will have to go to legal staff where they're going to be review of.
Right. You also prevent the people who conceal the gun and if they broke the law against where they fired the gun. And those people, even if you have a written charge, they're still going to go for that. It just comes down to how many times do you need to keep putting it on paper for people who care less to use. I think that it brings up a broader issue that is a little bit concerning to me, and that is the question of enforcement. A lot of these rules and whether that can potentially become selective and then the discretion is on to it. And sometimes that can work just fine.
Right.
And sometimes it becomes a problem. When I lived in New York City, there was an issue in the news where there was very selective enforcement of the alcohol rule in part. So if somebody sitting listening to for a concert with a glass of wine was never bothered. The guy sitting around with their 40 groups is a big guy. And then there comes not only, and I don't think that's that particular issue that happened here, but it's very easy for less enforcement to be okay, and it's very easy for less enforcement to not be okay.
Right.
So you have to be careful. And I
suggested that selective enforcement would overrule or would be a good guiding principle, and that didn't sit well at all. But I believe that our officers are both reasonable and prudent, and they can determine. But that doesn't work for them.
No, I mean, everybody thinks about, you know, of course, when I think, okay, well, I know that I've had my dog off leash at the department. So I have, and it's officer or mom, I'd be excited for that if there was a rule. And that would be a bump, you know, if you're a knight, if the officer overlooked, you know, that rule. But, you know, I could be on the other end of that so easily, you know.
Sure.
I could see all that. So when I worked up in Portland, work at Old Town, trying to stop the street drinkers and all that, the 40 ounces and all that. So we did no alcohol zones. First person we took, it was a businessman standing out on the sidewalk walking people go by, and he was drinking. I'm not included in that.
Yeah, you are.
And this is where I can see the gym, I can see the police department, where do we do? But you got to remember, for every rule that's put in place, the operational manager, how it would be done, is spelled out.
Right.
And so, I'm glad we don't have to make those
decisions.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So that's not the bottom of the community.
No. And I thank you. And so that will go back before council on Monday. And hopefully they'll have meaningful discussion and then direct us to move in a direction on behalf of the citizens.
Yeah. And that's another issue. We have so few officers. The only time you're going to find one in the park is this has been an incident. So there's not going to be any enforcement right here out of the park anyway. That's after they've committed the crime.
Yeah, it will probably be complaint driven or call related.
Right.
But next, I want to talk just briefly about staffing changes within the department. Last week, John Johnston, who is a 22-year employee with the department. He was our building operations coordinator, which is basically the head of maintenance and HVAC and all the systems and stuff that we have here, was transferred to the city manager's department. And he is working directly with another city employee named Jerry Savanskis, who's in charge of all building maintenance, who has announced his retirement. So, yeah, Jerry is going to retire, and so they felt like John Johnston would be a good fit to at least start learning that position and how that's all going to play out. We'll see. He still is available to us on a needs basis. So if something was broken or I needed something, I could request for him to come and work here for that, whatever that means. Another employee gave his resignation this week, and he is a part-time maintenance worker in the Parks Department. His name is Dean Bateman. He's long-time Newport resident. Dean was involved with Bateman's Funeral Home, if you know where that was, and also a graduate of Newport High. I think 1951, but don't quote me on that. It could easily have been earlier. No, it could have been. Maybe it could have. Who knows? So he does some delivery work for us and did some stuff like that. But we had to reduce his hours just because it's wintertime and he didn't feel like it was worth getting reduced anymore. So he'll just chase other opportunities. So that's some of the. Oh, and then the other staff change is as of tomorrow, Margaret will be retiring. Margaret is our front counter person who is here from 4:45 to about 8 or 9 o'clock, and it's just her time. She's ready to retire, and so. She's been here, I think, since the building has been open or whatnot. And if it's okay with you, I'd just like to go out there and snatch her if she's still there and bring her in and recognize her in front of you and just say thank you, if that's okay. Let me do that real quick. She doesn't know what's happening. And she did just go away with that one.
Like a lady. Served in the military. All over. And she's going down to Ecuador, where her brother is. There's some time down there.
What are the brothers
doing? I have no idea. I didn't get that far. I'm going to ask her. Hi, Margaret. Park and Rec advisory board. They meet there once a month. But I told them that you would be retiring, and that we'll... it would be okay, as I said, we thank you from the advisory board for your many years of service and your great dedication for coming in tirelessly for today. And just a real valuable asset to the Parks Department Rec Center here, and someone that we will struggle to try to find someone as dedicated and trustworthy and just a great individual. And a friend.
Yeah.
I'm like explaining that your new adventure. I'm going to Ecuador.
I'm actually going to be in a little town called Chewing, where my brother's visiting, staying.
Have you been there before?
I have.
No.
Oh, wow. You're in the can and you're in the
summertime. It's a good way to start a new adventure in my life.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss the people I meet in the morning, but I see them around town. So.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Margaret.
Margaret's a member of our stretch class on Monday with us, and we're trying to get her to document her trip and come back and show us.
Yeah, oh, that's great.
Thank you.
Have a good trip. Yeah. Thank
you. Moving on, citizen. I just wrote citizen comments in press. I don't know if you did the paper or if you looked through the paper, but there was a beautiful article about Coast Park and volunteers that involved with that, and it was just real positive, and I was just real appreciative that the press has taken some level of focus on the Parks and Rec Department and the good things that are happening, and kind of gives you something to smile about. Also, you may not have read the letters to the editor, but there was one from a citizen that had come here and spoke quite a bit, and they had good things to say about the herbicide policy and how that handled. And and that's unsolicited, and so it's really nice when those come along because they just don't seem to be coming along very often. So you know, I think all in all, the Parks and Rec Department should be a source of pride in a community, and I think at some level we're seeing that. So we've got the Adopt the Park thing through council now. We've got the herbicide policy through council. We're working through with rules. Hopefully that won't get a negative spin on it. I'm going to try to keep it positive and with an educational component of understanding that we're doing this in order to make the environment either safer or better or both. So that's all I wanted to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to send an article about the park,
yes,
about the equipment that
has been going. Yes. Yes. You know, I have the ability to not manipulate the press, never manipulate, but serve some of my needs through the press, and so and I never call them, they call me.
Yeah.
And so when I got that call, and I was able to talk about the volunteerism and all the good things and whatnot, I wanted to bring some awareness to some negative things that have happened there. I mean, and one of them is the skateboarders.
Yeah.
They took candles and wax down a rail so that they could skateboard easier on it.
Yeah.
And that's not a skateboard park, and that's not okay. And then a piece of equipment was broken by some big kids, older teens and that kind of stuff. So we can't police that park 24/7. The police department can't park that. So it really becomes a community asset that the community has to step up and say, hey, that's not okay. And if they don't know what's going on, then they can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was more my way of saying, hey, folks, I need your help.
Yeah.
And it worked because the Montessori school is going to have a neighborhood watch party program where they educate all their parents and people that come through and say, hey, let's keep an eye on our park so we can keep it nice.
Yeah.
And so that's why I said that. It's true and it happened, but that was one way that I can serve some of my needs, and that's to not have vandalism. And so that's what happened there.
Because you can possibly work on things like that by giving the kids a sense of ownership, like maybe around the playground area, work at the school kitchen, and possibly have them have like a field trip day where they come out and maybe plant a few flowers around the playground, plus the kids still being a little bit protected as well, before the other kids get their stuff.
Absolutely, and I have not gone to the children level, although I know that kids go through there all the time. We did get some youth involvement in spreading the chips and whatnot, but also the young professionals that came out, most of them brought kids with them. They brought their own children. It wasn't specifically targeted for youth, but since they were there, we put them to work or watched them in the stroller or what have you. And then that does exactly what you're mentioning. It creates ownership. And anybody who's lifted a finger and put a little sweat equity into that feels like it's theirs. And we want that. So
I think there's a class distinction there to some degree between the people who probably do that with their children,
yep,
the children that might be more likely to do the vandalism. And I was thinking if you can get the schools, just even one day, just to find too old or something, you're reaching all levels.
Yes. I agree. So I'll see what I can do into that direction. I will also share with you that this week on Monday, I got a call that there was a work party going on in Coast Park. And I was like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to know what's going on with that kind of stuff. And it wasn't one that I had organized or set in motion. And when I got there, I observed six gentlemen shoveling and hauling all the chips into the play areas, and I directed them a little bit, but just randomly, six people showed up, and I don't want to stereotype, but I don't think any of them spoke English, and I said I would like to document their activity so that we can leverage it against our grant, because we have a match for volunteerism. And he said, oh, the school already did. So, which I have an agreement with Linda Yap, who owns Montessori School, that she's recording, all volunteer through her help. And she had already gone over and had them fill out that form, which is a little tricky, But she'd already had done that. And so I asked Linda, I said, where did these people come from? Hard-working guys on a Monday morning. And she said, oh, they're just neighborhood dads. So, I just love that stuff. So I was inspired, and it was totally random volunteerism, and they just wanted to help out. Maybe they saw that thing in the article in the paper. Maybe they were sitting around with nothing. I don't know what happened, but something magic happened. So that was good.
I think all what's going on is want to show their party to the
yep.
Right.
And they're willing to help and be a part of it. And I think something just a thought with the vandalism, you should partner with juvenile court and have them make them go back and clean that part up so to correct the damage to it.
Mm-hmm.
They'll see the cause and effect of their actions. And I think juvenile court would be very willing to do that. And if we keep having that, then
We did invite the juvenile work crews to come and participate. It's very difficult to match the exact offender to the exact corrective action. These are near impossible just because of the time frame and the whatnot. But I hear what you're saying. Thank you. Coast Park is kind of in the final phases. We got the slide delivered on Monday. So we have the slide in place. We're trying to figure out the best way to put it in, whether that's with our staff, National Guard, or just hire a contractor to kind of do that. We also have one more piece of the park to go up top. We need to put in the pavilion. And so it'll be up by the ship that way, just a little covered area. And we'll put up a picnic table under there, too. Yeah, if you look at the big plan, it was actually slated to be down further by the pack, but we kind of phased. We're going to do that in another phase. We just didn't have the resource and the it was just too daunting to do that. So when we kind of said, well, we'll do that that part of the path in a different phase,
yeah.
We kind of ignored the little pavilion area. We met with the state grantor just to say, hey, come on down, see if we're on track. You know, there's a significant amount of paperwork and tracking and recording. And so we said, come on down, just talk with us and see what we're doing, see where we're at. And through that process, she said, well, I didn't see a pavilion. Where's that?
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, well, we're thinking maybe we'll do that in another phase. She said, well, it's in this grant, and it's funded in this grant. So if we don't do it in this grant, she said, it's fine. But that program of work, it's stricken right out. And we said, well, we're going to make sure we get a pavilion put in. So we are scrambling right now to make sure that happens with the timeline and everything. And so far we're okay, but we're getting close. So that's just the update on Coast Park.
Can we hear from Coast Park? Do we have a written cutting date?
We do not. And it will probably be the first of the year sometime. And I don't want to pull in a whole bunch of people until I have it just pristine and done and all the elements are checked off, and I would want to invite the state parks over, and you know, some dignitaries and stuff. I mean, it's a crown jewel. I mean, really. And we're getting, and you can see it and feel it, and it's coming alive, but we're not there yet. A little bit of work to do. So
the Weather Bureau.
What's that?
Just call the Weather Bureau.
Yeah. So anyway, that's all I really want to talk about on Coast Park.
Can we just go backwards for one second? I meant to ask again with the vacuum cleaner.
Yes.
Are those solutions going to be backdoored?
No, not at this time.
None of the three?
No. We have to do something with the control desk position. We can't let that sit empty. So we have a pool of people that do that because there's like 119 hours or something of time that is covered in that program of work. So we will have to hire somebody. They just fit in the pool and we just shuffle those hours around. It will be challenging to find somebody who wants to come in at 4:45 to like 9 o'clock. 4 days a week. It's a non-benefited position. It's a couple pennies over minimum wage, and you can't work more than 20 hours. So it's a challenge, but we'll find somebody. Well, it'll work out. So that one will be covered. The part maintenance worker will not be replaced at this time. Try to pick up a seasonal or something in the summertime when the work picks up. But one of the things that is important is to unlock bathrooms. And it's seemingly like such a simple little thing, but to run around and unlock a dozen bathrooms can be daunting. And so in the wintertime, we shut certain bathrooms down. We just don't open them at all. Remoter areas or more unused areas. And then we also have the ability to require our cleaning service, Associated Cleaning does that, to do some of that. And it's easier for them to do it in the wintertime because they're much slower. In the summertime, they can't guarantee a time, so I mean, they're scrambling just to get stuff done. So that's kind of what reduced the need for that exactly. So that's how that happened. But the maintenance coordinator position is available for that person, John, we call him, John Johnson. But John is available to come and work, you know, if a machine breaks or if we have a specific need, we can call him in for that.
Yeah.
But to have him here 40 hours a week, that position will, at this point, appears to not be. Yes, we call those people building attendants. And if the building is open, we have to have a building attendant. We have to have two people. So at 4:45, a building attendant and a control desk person. And they're complementary but very, very different jobs. The building attendants set up the room like this. They do all the floors. They do all the restrooms. They do all the maintenance, janitorial, and setup type of things. They also would be the ones we would call first if there was a problem or something. And problems here are not super common, but we're a public building and we're open to the public, and there's a transient population that accesses themselves to public buildings, and then there are also opportunities for spirited conflict during sporting events.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to say that. So, yeah, and so we would have, in most cases, a building attendant would be the one to try to to separate that kind of stuff.
I think Margaret actually be there.
We would never send a control desk person to break up a fight. Yeah. So, and that's, it's not a daily occurrence, but it's enough.
Yeah.
And actually, our sports coordinator is excellent at diffusing anything.
Yeah.
He just walks up and people.
Yeah.
So, but he's not always here. So, but a building attendant and a control desk person is always here. So that's good. So that's all I have under my report.
Has anybody driven by the Sister City Park?
Yeah.
Very nice.
97.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be a nice article of Adopt Park.
Yeah.
Okay. New business, sir.
Well, under new business, I really want to just quickly talk about a new problem that's a luxury problem. Our sports program is doing so good, we are now scrambling to find coaches. And so we're kind of hitting record numbers of participation for youth sports, basketball and such, that we need about 10 coaches right now. So Liam is shouting out from all the corners, and I don't know if you noticed on Lincoln News today and that kind of stuff. So I think so. We're ringing the bell. So if you know somebody that would like to do some coaching, by all means get in touch with us here. Under new, our pool is seeing significant increases in usage in the lap swimming in the evening time. And I said to our pool supervisor, her name's Kathy, I said, Kathy, why? What's new? And she said, the NOAA people have figured out where they're at. So we have 5 boats in, and apparently there's a large population of people that can live on those boats even while at port, and they need to go and recreate, and they found our public pool there. So that's the only reason I'm putting it under
new business. One more boat's coming in.
One more.
Really?
If you notice, they moved the bell, Machada, over to make room, and it's the last one from Alaska, 2 from Alaska, and 4 that are here. They're here for all America.
That's so cool. Also, look at the last swimming program earlier in the day. I know at least part of the time it's up against a program called Mommy and Me, and there isn't room for a lot of lap swimmers because the mommies are in the way.
And again, it's a problem, but it's a luxury problem because we got so much usage on that we have to share space and compete and stuff. Clearly, a new facility with 2 bodies of water would alleviate that problem, but we don't have that luxury solution to our luxury problem.
Too bad we couldn't do a corporation or something, go out and get NOAA signed up for all their employees to be able to use them.
That's all I have for new business.
Old business.
Well, under old business, I was just thinking about things when we put the agenda together, and a lot of times I don't bullet point all the stuff that we talk about, but I did want to, because the agenda does go out in public, and I just wanted to just kind of make notes so that if people were looking, there has been a draft finalized for our herbicide policy. I don't have it here today because It was approved by council as amended, and so there was a few things that went in, and the city recorder has not, to my knowledge, republished that. So once I get that, that will be a draft policy. It was a long process, twists, turns, unhappiness, happiness. At the end, I think the public process worked. I think that citizens were involved. I think it was properly vetted to the community. And I think we have a policy that reflects what our practice is, and we're not using herbicides. And it doesn't restrict us from using it. It just makes it difficult, and probably that's a good thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
So good for the environment, good for the citizenry, and good for the pets and animals that use that kind of stuff. So I would just caution everybody that, that type of program change in how we do business doesn't come without a price. And so usage of herbicide is very effective, it's very quick, it's very inexpensive compared to the non-herbicide methods. And so with that in mind, when you talk with people, say, hey, look, we're not using herbicides, and the result is that we have a slower response time, we have more weeds, we have more stuff, and that's just the trade-off, and that's that. Next, I wanted to talk briefly about what I'm calling the final disposition of the Celtic Festival. I've reported along the way that there was a group of volunteers that felt like they should maintain and own that event, and they did the necessary requesting and meeting with staff and council and made that happen. At the last council meeting, there was a discussion. It wasn't a formal vote or anything, but there was an agreement that the city is going to declare surplus all of the souvenirs, the t-shirts and trinkets and the equipment that was purchased for that purpose, and they're just going to donate that to the event. Then there was also a request that they wanted some financial compensation, citing that there was some money that was made, but the city manager, finance director, myself, and the mayor had a meeting with these folks and explained to them how there is no money. When you look at the expense of city staff, time and equipment, and it really was a net loss.
Mm-hmm.
That was discussed, and council gave no indication whatsoever that they would be willing to financially write a check. One councilor may have even gone as far as to say, well, if they want to participate, have them write us a check for the difference. But not going to happen. But so that's kind of we're getting down to the final chapter on the Celtic Festival. And I will share with you that there's been great lessons learned all along.
Do they have a 501c3 or some formal arrangement at this point? Or?
I think they have an LLC.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what their business is.
From that meeting, do you think they accepted that, or are they going to turn it into form?
Well, certainly any citizen could come before any elected body at any time, and whether or not they'll be happy with that or not, I couldn't even speculate.
Well, and the other thing is that the non-profit is putting out there in the entire line. You never seen And if we're giving them all the banners and everything, I would say, well, figure in that package is a considerable amount of money being turned over to them.
Sure. And if I was to represent their opinion, is that they earned it anyways? That it was their, it was theirs to have again.
I heard when it was going on the other day. I just feel like it's a bit,
Other? Well, I was thinking under other, we might talk about the council-appointed task force that was charged with the task of looking at the management of the rec center and the pool and to see if there were economies of scale or the ability to be less dependent on the city's general fund. And that task force has met on several occasions. They met, in fact, last night. And they were scheduled to meet with the city council on Monday at a work session for an update and to brief them on their findings, etc. They elected last night to not meet on Monday, but rather push it into December because they just didn't have enough of their information gathered and compiled, and so the plan, as I understand it, is that they are going to talk to three different points, you know, the charge, the findings, and the recommendation. Two of the members of the task force have agreed to get together and sort of write up an issue paper or a white paper on that and then go in December and talk to council about updates and what they're finding in terms of other other departments, other operations, other things. It was my feeling, based on what I heard, that the task force will not be going forward with a recommendation to privatize. That seemed to come across pretty clear last night. Yes. Just to back up, they will not be coming to council on Monday with an update, but yet they'll come again in December. They just aren't ready yet with their compiling of information. The task force members have gone to numerous different facilities. They've looked at operational models and what they're doing there. They've looked at levels of subsidy. They've looked at how they exist and survive and whatnot. And in some cases, it's been discovered that some of these nonprofits are not actually surviving. With the stated that the YMCA has closed four different centers in Portland just recently and haven't made any money since 08, apparently. And the Boys and Girls Club has shut down two facilities in Eugene. And then I just learned last night that the Croc Center is actually underwater. So, or upside down, and so there's a theme. It's not just here, but the reality and this discussion last night that these facilities, in most cases, have to be subsidized, and in order to provide the community benefit the community need. So that's the task force update that I'm aware of. I would ask Ed, who was there and had some opinions and observations, to chime in if there's something that you wanted to further on that vein. Or
I think what's encouraging is the realization, first of all, what makes a city. We all agree upon that. This is something that is needed. It's part of the wellness of your community. It's a draw for your community. You're really the center of your community. And so building on that, looking at how we can improve it and to work with the city council to lessen the burden of subsidy is to form a foundation. And we're looking at that And I'm going to talk to Jim because I used to have nightmares last night with a whole bunch of ideas and I remember them all. But we need to get a good cross-section of business and participants together. And when I say model, I mean look at the Hospitals Foundation, how they work, and some of the other foundations, and build something here that we can start building. But the council will need to understand it's never going to happen overnight. It's going to be 5, 6, 7 years, and they've got to be patient to see that the light at the end of this tunnel is progress and not a gray on dust that we're going to hold. So laying this out like this, we can start, once we formulate that, what is needed here right now that can't come out of the budget? Foundation goes for it. What does this unit here need to build a partnership with the hospital or a partnership with the community college or a partnership with this business that says we want a wellness program but we need this and this? So we need to look at all these avenues and look at what we can do to create money on the side that we can start building interest on and building it up for the rainy day that we can bring stuff in, and that will alleviate the pressure of always having to subsidize. And so there's all kinds of aspects of it that we're looking at, but we have to get the council to buy into it and realize they have to agree on the timeline. It's not going to happen overnight.
And there was also discussion about a subsidy amount.
Yes.
You know, we looked at the recovery rate. We recover about 57% of the operational expenses here at the rec center and the pool. And you know, we talked a little bit about making a commitment or, you know, making this a priority or lining up with a priority. And there wasn't much support for looking at a percentage amount, but rather a dollar figure. At least one or two were said, you know, the city should commit to a dollar figure, that should not live within that, and there you go. And if that number could be exceeded or increased relative to other departments increasing, then that would be fine, but it shouldn't be decreased. Because, you know, there's a realization that if you keep whittling away, you're going to get nothing. And so that was part of that discussion. Yeah. And that's all I really wanted to talk about with that. Yeah. I also just want to, just sort of in front of you all, thank Judy Mayhew. Judy's our recreation superintendent here, who is also the one who took over. We lost our assistant here. We had an administrative assistant through some budget cuts a couple years ago. We lost that position, and so she took over all those responsibilities as well as the rec superintendent, which runs all the programs and stuff here. So she's tasked, and she also is the one who types up all these minutes for me. So she does that, and I just wanted to say thanks to her. And she'll hear it on the tape, so thanks, Judy. Yeah, and really appreciate her. So, that's all.
Any other comments or business that needs to be brought up? If not, next meeting will be?
I don't have a calendar on, I apologize. Usually it's on my phone and my phone on my desk. It would be and that was just an oversight. It will most likely be the third Wednesday.
The 14th.
Does it fall quickly again?
It's on the 14th. No, by live, it is the 21st.
That sounds more reasonable.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, everybody.